This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Welcome to Here and Back Again. I'm David O'Callaghan, and this is a podcast looking at all things releasing weekly on streaming and in cinemas, with your usual pop culture bits thrown in. Right, I'm in the hot seat. I'm just out of the cinema. I've rushed home. I'm straight out of Madam Web. I stumbled back to the gaff and decided to get my thoughts and put them out on the pod. But do you know what? I don't want to talk too soon. I feel I should calm myself. I should have a cup of tea. Maybe take a look at streaming before I go and look back into the abyss. After all, despite not having a huge box office release scheduled this week, streaming definitely has a smorgasbord of delightful offerings for you. So, shall we begin? With my number one movie of 2023, a thing of absolute wonderful beauty that I have already seen three times, and you may have heard me babble on here once or twice. Well, it's now streaming on Netflix, folks. Yes, Past Lives from the wonderful Celine Song, who has her feature directorial debut here, and starring Greta Lee, who, oh Greta, absolutely astonishing in this role. The story of Nora and Hae Sung, two deeply connected childhood friends who are wrest apart after Nora's family emigrates from South Korea to Canada. Decades later, they are reunited for one fateful week as they confront destiny, love, and the choices that make a life. Oh, lads and lasses, oh my god. This movie will give you all the emotions, all the feels. It will restore your faith in humanity, in cinema, and well, it'll just warm the cockles of your soul. Are there cockles in your soul? I've no idea. Gorgeous, wonderful stuff. I can't believe they didn't release it on Valentine's Day. What the hell? But anyway, it's now out on Netflix, and that is Past Lives, and I should really just shut up now. But before I shut up, do you know what confuses me? When I follow up, so shall we begin with more talking rather than a clip, and it completely confuses me. I don't know what I'm doing. My inflections, it's all over the place. So now, there's so again. Anyway, I just want you to know, behind the curtain, this is what I think about. Let's go back to streaming. I'll shut up now. Definitely.
Monsieur Dior. I keep looking for a great collection to rise from the ashes of the war. Monsieur Dior, what do you desire?
To design the most beautiful women's clothing that ever existed.
Christian Dior ruined French couture, and I'm coming back to save it.
In the new look on Apple TV Plus, this biographical drama gives us the story of how fashion icon Christian Dior and his contemporaries, including Coco Chanel, Pierre Balmain and Cristobal Balenciaga, navigated the horrors of World War II and launched modern fashion. The series focuses on Dior, played here by Ben Mendelsohn, during Nazi-occupied Paris and after World War II when he created his fashion line that unofficially got named New Look, a collection that celebrated ultra-femininity in direct rebellion against the styles of the 20s and 30s. The series is created by Todd A. Kessler. Yes, we do love a bit of Todd, who gave us Damages and Bloodlines, and also was a key writer on Sopranos. There you go. It also stars Juliette Binoche as Coco Chanel, Maisie Williams as Catherine Dior, John Malkovich as Lucien Lelong, and Emily Mortimer as Elsa Lombardi. Throw in a few Glenn Close cameos and a pretty awesome soundtrack of modern covers of period-appropriate songs produced by none other than Jack Antonoff. And all I can say is, Zuta lore and manja. What's not to love? The new look drops its first 3 of 10 episodes from today. And yeah, what's to say? You just, you know, you gotta look nice. Put on something nice when you're watching it and enjoy. And from a fashion dynasty, Apple are going big this week and bringing it home with another sports ball dynasty of their own. And no, it's not the Kansas City Chiefs.
In pro football, nobody's entitled to anything. You have to go out there and earn it.
I was pretty intent on proving myself.
We were going to determine the future of football in New England.
The Patriots are Super Bowl champions!
First dynasty of the century.
This game is like a narcotic. You're chasing that forever.
Breaking news right now.
Spygate. Deflategate.
Aaron couldn't separate himself from that dark side.
The Super Bowl has ended. There's a quiet calm in the NFL. The new season is months away. And Tay-Tay is going on tour in Europe with Travis and hopefully Jason. Before I start, as some of you may know, I'm a very sad, very miserable New York Jets fan. So when it comes to American football, the words New and England and Patriots riles me no end. They're like both Manchester clubs rolled into one. However, I'm a bigger man than that and I do love a good sports doc, and especially one based on a fantastic sports book. The Dynasty New England on Apple TV Plus looks at one of the NFL's most successful teams, sadly, and is based on that brilliant book of the same name by Jeff Benedict. And this one also has the blessing and involvement of a certain Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. This team, once a basket case, almost bankrupt, and the collective of glorious failure in the mid-90s, saw its look vastly improved with the arrival of head coach Bill Belichick and quarterback Tom Brady, that suddenly saw them go on a quite ridiculous run where they collected 6 Super Bowl titles and, yeah, just annoyed the world. And in fairness, if you thought this was going to be a fluffy piece of self-promotion, as with some recent sports stocks, well, fear not, because Belichick and Brady aren't the greatest of mates, let's say, and have a lot to say in the series. And also, the series does not shy away from the controversies like Deflategate and Spygate, and even in one case, one of their players involved in the murder. It's batshit, people. Batshit. Highly, highly recommended, especially if you're a sports ball head, and also if you want to see how the next 10 years may look in the NFL, when we sadly may be looking at a new documentary called The Dynasty 2, Kansas City. Anyway, I'm all excited. I don't care. I'm in. I'll boot the screen while watching it, but The Dynasty New England is now on Apple TV+.
Football is referred to as a beautiful game, but in Sunderland, it's a lot more than a thing of beauty. It's a way of life. As a Sunderland fan, you learn to live with setback after setback. But we've seen nothing like this in my lifetime. Back-to-back relegations.
Sunderland absolutely shell-shocked.
The drop in leagues and the standard of the game.
The spiral just went down and down and down, you know?
Why is it natural?
On a city level, there's been a huge struggle. It's been a time of strife and change is never easy.
On the opposite scale of all that money involved in the NFL, what some would say is the original footy doc that inspired Rob McElhenney to invest in Wrexham AFC along with Ryan Reynolds. Sunderland Till I Die returns for a third and final season after a 4-year hiatus. The show follows the attempts to help the Sunderland club out of a financial situation, shall we say, and get it out of tier 3 of the UK's football leagues, where they collapse, or some would say jumped through the trapdoor at the end of season 2. Definitely a roller coaster of emotions, and like Wrexham, ultimately a human story about connection and fans. Be prepared, folks. Be prepared. There may be blubbing. Sunderland Till I Die, it's, you know what? It's like the full-on emo version of Welcome to Wrexham. They don't do cheery very much. It's only 3 episodes long, so, you know, you're not committing to too much. So, go on, just jump back in. And there's also a previously on, so you don't even have to watch the first 2 seasons. It's worth watching. And also, it must be so weird for Sunderland fans while their neighbours and rivals Newcastle are swimming in all that Saudi money and living at large across the city. Oh my god. It's no surprise who I'm cheering for in that battle. Anyways, Sunderland Till I Die, season 3, the final season, is now on Netflix.
I know what they say about me. About hopeless romantics. That we're weak. But I'm not weak. I learned the hard way. Not all love stories have a happy ending.
Time's up. Let's pick this back up next week.
We've had Tay Tay's Eras Tour concert movie. We had Renaissance, a film by Beyonce in cinemas recently. Well, move over, ladies, because J-Lo has things to say in her new narrative-driven experimental movie, This Is Me Now, a love story which is on Prime Video. Released to coincide with her new album of the same name, which is also out today, J-Lo showcases her journey to love through her own eyes in a visually stunning and possibly a bit bizarre kind of movie. It's part documentary, it's part music video, it's kind of a film. It's directed by herself and classic music video director David Mayers. Do you know what? Feck it, it's J-Lo. Sure, why wouldn't you? You'll be glad to hear that despite Ben Affleck starring in it, his Dunkin' Donuts Boston band, the Dunkings, or Dun Kings, do not appear. Wise, J-Lo, very wise. That's J-Lo's This Is Me Now, a love story, which is on Prime Video, along with her album, which is released on your usual streaming platforms. Also out this week, we have the Vince Staples Show on Netflix. The rapper Vince Staples plays a version of himself in this 5-episode scripted comedy loosely based on his life from his childhood in Long Beach, California to the present day. This comedic observation of the price of fame and how one can never truly let go of your past, no matter how sketchy. Like J-Lo, this one's another musical artist at least trying something different to the usual bland, tried and tested paths of those who came before them. As I said, it's only 5 episodes, so maybe worth a nose if meta and rap is your thing. That's the Vince Staples Show, which is now on Netflix. And it gets blander. That comes in the form of the Sidemen story on Netflix. This is a new documentary which explores the 10-year rise of Europe's most popular YouTube group, the Sidemen. Oh, listen, as I said, it's most likely going to be an absolute smash for Netflix based on the huge success of these lads. While it does delve deep into things like online trolling, mental health issues and the feuds which broke out amongst the group, I personally have not a piece of interest in this. Pure zero. So I'll just let the cool kids dive in and enjoy it in peace in the corner with their headphones on. Although with all the shouting these guys seem to do, even with headphones on, peace may not be an option. Anyway, that's the Sidemen story, which is now all up on Netflix.
Okay, listen, John and I are getting married.
Let's get you wedding ready.
Okay. There's no mirror here.
It's okay. We don't need it.
Do I look okay?
Well, it's too late.
I want to appreciate this moment. I'm not going to let anything get me down.
Hey, Beth! Let's go in and see if they have a table.
Do you have shoes?
Yes, but I left them at the horse farm. Would you hold these? I have to pee so bad.
Amy Schumer's okay but not quite amazing show Life and Beth returns to Disney Plus for a surprising second season. Schumer plays Beth, a 37-year-old former wine salesperson stuck in an existential rut. In season one, she returned to Long Island to figure out a future for herself and then stumbled across Farmer John, played by Michael Cera, who, let's just say, is an odd little fish. Season 2 sees the couple moving on in life in a very positive way, engaged to be married, and with all the kids planned. But Beth, yes, Beth, is growing scared, her traumatic history with men causing her to question everything. It's from here on that the midlife crisis and derailment truly, truly kicks in. Will Beth make it to the end of season 2 with a life fulfilled before Hulu and Disney ultimately cancel the show? Well, you can find out now because Life and Beth season 2 is now on Disney Plus.
Who is she again?
That's Nick Russell.
He's New York's most eligible bachelor.
He's a war reporter. And he saved an actual orphan from an actual burning building.
Was it burning?
Collapsing.
Sinking.
Maybe just like a bad building somewhere.
Mm. What's wrong with you?
I might like him.
Like him?
I'm 33 and I want an adult.
Want this dude? Let's get him.
We need to play, guys. What do we got?
We've never played for keeps.
Well, then, it's Moneyball this shit, baby.
Moving into the romantic section of the pod. And yes, it's, you know, you may have already binged these on Valentine's Day. But anyway, in Players on Netflix, New York sports writer Mac, played by Gina Rodriguez, devises successful hookup plays and techniques with friend Adam, who's played by Damon Wayans Jr., and their crew. However, when she unexpectedly falls head over heels for one of her targets or one of her marks, they all must learn what it takes to go from simply scoring to playing for keeps. Oh yeah, absolute beautiful and glorious rom-com nonsense. Leave that brain soaking in the kitchen with some hot oils and instead grab some vino and salty snacks and just embrace the old school rom-com vibes of this one. Sweet! That is Players, which is now on Netflix. Also out this week on Prime Video, we have Five Blind Dates, which is, yes, another rom-com. You think there was a day worthy of all these rom-coms dropping or something, which sees a woman told by a fortune teller that she will meet her soulmate on one of the next five dates she goes on, and it'll also help save her flailing tea shop business. This is one of Amazon Australia's first original movies, and again, if you're in the mood for a romantic double bill, this would make a nice follow-up to Players. Feck it, why not? It looks very cute, seems to have a lot of heart, and reviews have been pretty decent. So that's Five Blind Dates, which is now on Prime Video. Also out this week, not a romantic movie in any way, is The Retirement Plan on Paramount Plus, which sees Nick Cage return with this straight-to-video action thriller, which definitely fits into the muck category we've discussed before. This is his take the money and run Nick Cage, as opposed to the actually quite good Nick Cage. When Ashley and her young daughter get caught up in a criminal enterprise that puts their lives at risk, she returns to estranged father Matt, currently living the life of a retired beach bum in the Cayman Islands. Despite having a half-decent cast, including Ashley Green, Ron Perlman, and Jackie Earle Haley, who is not Jackie Healy Ray, although probably for this movie he would probably fit in. This one is definitely for Nick Cage enthusiasts only, as opposed to those who like Nick Cage in good movies. That's The Retirement Plan, which is now on Paramount Plus. Einstein and the Bomb on Netflix is one of those docudramas which combines archival footage with dramatization and explores key moments in the science genius's life after he fled Nazi Germany and how his work has changed history's course. Perfectly timed to coincide with all that Oppenheimer Awards buzz happening right now. Everything he says in the film here is taken, seemingly, from words he said or wrote. Anyway, that's Einstein and the Bomb, which is now on Netflix. And three quick ones for the smallies out there. Just a few little pieces. Star Wars Young Jedi Adventure Season 2 on Disney Plus is set 200 years before The Phantom Menace during the High Republic era and follows Jedi younglings as they study the ways of the Force, explore the galaxy, help citizens and creatures in need, and learn valuable lessons needed to become Jedi along the way. Also cute. Similarly, Spidey and His Amazing Friends Season 3, which is also on Disney Plus, sees Peter Parker, Miles Morales, and Gwen Stacy join forces with the Hulk, Miss Marvel, and Black Panther to fight their common enemies and learn that working together as a team is the best. Cute, educational, harmless, smally fun through the learning lens of massive IP that'll hopefully get them to buy the toys. Yes, that's Star Wars Young Jedi Adventure Season 2 and Spidey and His Amazing Friends Season 3, which are both now on Disney Plus. And finally, for the smallies, one that's, you know, a little bit more intriguing and may have a bit more adult appeal is Snoopy Presents Welcome Home Franklin, which is on Apple TV Plus. Newcomer Franklin has trouble fitting in with the Peanuts gang. However, when he learns about a soapbox derby race, he's sure that winning the race will also mean winning over new friends. Yes, if you think of this as a classic origin story of a beloved Peanuts gang character, then you'll obviously be all in. Cuteness is absolutely guaranteed, 100%. That Snoopy Presents Welcome Home Franklin, which is now on Apple TV Plus. And with the smallies occupied and in the corner over there doing their thing, the older folks, they can sit back, relax, and just get ready for the carnage, because it's back, baby. It's back.
Oh my God! I feel optimistic that my person is here.
I don't really give the nice guy a try, but I really want something real. I have a daughter. She's the most important part of my life.
Have you ever been close to getting married?
Well, I was married.
How many followers do you have on Instagram?
Okay, bro.
Yes, Netflix's reality dating series Love is Blind returns for its sixth season. You most likely know by now how this one works. A new group of singles tried to find a match and fall in love without ever seeing each other face to face, as the emotional connection attempts to conquer physical attraction. Ah, yes. Nick and Vanessa return to host the predictable madness of it all. Listen, why would I even dwell on this? You know who the hell you are at this stage. You're either pumped, hyped and raring to go, or you will be avoiding the water cooler for the next few weeks. Anyways, the first six episodes were released on 14th of Feb, with new episodes coming out each week until the finale, which is Wednesday, 6th of March. Ah, yes. Good times, good times. That's Love is Blind Season 6, which is now on Netflix. Less romantic and possibly just as annoying, the Grand Tour sand job on Prime Video races towards its inevitable demise as the great comet Amazon hurtles towards those dinosaurs known as Clarkson, Hammond and May. In this first of three final kind of specials they're doing, the sand job sees our trio in the remote African country of Mauritania following in the footsteps of the legendary Paris-Dakar rally. Instead of bespoke Dakar racers, of course, the boys must complete their journey in cheap, modified sports cars. Again, far be it from me to slag off all those petrol heads of a certain vintage, but I will. You can have it. That is the Grand Tour Sand Job, which is now on Prime Video. And finally on streaming this week, looking at the non-English section. Oh, there's definitely only one place to start. Oh my God. That is House of Ninjas. It comes from Japan and this one is on Netflix and looks like a wild and thrilling ride. The Tawara family is the last ninja clan. It had abandoned its roots after an incident in the past, but now, years after retiring from their formidable ninja lives, the dysfunctional family must return to shadowy missions to take on the greatest crisis in Japanese history, one that threatens to shake the nation to its core. I have no idea what any of that means. All I know is House and Ninjas is in the title. After Cobra Kai and the Brother Son, is this the next big family martial arts hit? I don't care. As I said, I've looked at the trailer. Feck me, this is going to be mad. Insane looking, all the action. Folks should flock to it. So that's Japan's House of Ninjas. House Ninjas, get in, which is now on Netflix. The Abyss is the new Swedish movie that is not anything to do with James Cameron and his underwater epic. In this one, Frigga is a woman who tries to balance her risky job as a security chief at the world's largest underground mine with her family life. Then, obviously, Evan gets thrown into chaos when she has to fight for her life and the lives of her loved ones when her city starts collapsing into the mine. Gonna be dark and grim. Looks quite intriguing. That is The Abyss, which is now on Netflix. The Drought on Channel 4 and All 4 is a Spanish crime drama. An unprecedented drought reveals macabre evidence of a decades-old crime that leads to police from both sides of the Spanish-Portuguese border to investigate a small and close-knit community who are themselves grappling with the harsh realities of water scarcity during this relentless drought. As the police unearth the remains, there are clear signs of foul, dodgy play, thus a dangerous game of cat and mouse ensues. Yeah, looks pretty decent. That's The Drought. All 8 episodes are now up on All 4, or it'll be shown weekly on Channel 4 from Friday the 16th. And finally, in the non-English section, we have The Heartbreak Agency, which is a German rom-com on Netflix, where a skeptical journalist reluctantly participates in a heartbreak therapy session, I suppose, for an article. And then, yes, oh yes, he ends up opening his cynical heart to his charming therapist. Ah, yes. That's The Heartbreak Agency from Germany, which is now on Netflix. Oh, and finally, sorry, on TV, or Linear TV, is that what they call it, the kids call it these days? The awards season continues to sweep along, this time with the BAFTAs on Sunday night at 7pm on BBC One. Listen, the BAFTAs are a bit wild. They're kind of crazy and can be known to be somewhat batshit and make quite Looney Tune choices. But surely Oppenheimer is going to sweep this one. Although, I'm not going to back against them going rogue. These are the folks who gave an absolutely crazy amount of nominations to Saltburn, and if Saltburn gets any of the big awards, Rome is truly burning down. And yes, the BAFTAs will then forever be regarded as the crazy uncle who sits in the corner of the room and everyone should basically ignore. Anyways, always a lovely, lovely, lovely posh affair of a Sunday night. That is the BAFTAs, which airs on Sunday night at 7pm on BBC One. So that is your streaming for the week. As I said, while it doesn't have those big, big box office ones, there's still plenty of distractions. Decent ones at that for you. Cinema-wise, let's just say we're definitely in the mid-February rut and it's a mixed bag. Highs and lows. Higher's and lower's. So let's have a nose.
A week ago, I spent my life racing against time.
I'm gonna help you out today, okay?
Trying to save people who were running out of it.
Get ready!
Until one moment changed everything.
Come on!
Welcome back to the land of the living.
I don't understand what's happening. I've been having visions. I knew he was gonna die. I think I'm seeing the future.
New York City's a whole new level of crazy these days. What do you want
from me? So, okay, breathe. Sony had an idea. What if our version of Marvel had a little-known Spider-Man spin-off character that was mashed up with the Final Destination movie vibes? You know, bit of I see dead things. And then we got the same folks who scripted Morbius to write it. And feck it, you know what? Let's get the director behind the new Game of Thrones TV series starring Naomi Watts to do it. Because she's in the fast track. What can go wrong? We have a winner on our hands. In the latest of Sony's Spider-Man universe that doesn't involve Spider-Man, we meet Cassandra Webb, a New York City paramedic who starts to show signs of some kind of clairvoyance. Forced to confront revelations about her past, she must protect three young women from a mysterious adversary who wants them dead. Welcome, folks, as I said, to the wonderful world of Madam Webb. Where do I even begin? Okay, let's at least start with the positive. Okay, now that we've done that, let's look at, shall we call them issues in this movie, which seem to be quite vast. Going back to the script writers, clunky is not the word for this script. Shocking is probably more appropriate. These folks not only did Morbius, by the way, which was pretty appalling, as we all know. Their list of hits include Dracula Untold, The Last Witch Hunter, and Jared Butler's Gods of Egypt. I can see the pattern. Did nobody else see the pattern? Anyway, we'll keep going. As for S.J. Clarkson, who was hired on the basis of having a new hit HBO Game of Thrones series and getting in before her price went up, well, did no one kind of spot the fact that after having filmed the pilot, HBO looked at it and totally canned the HBO series with Naomi Watts and went with the House of the Dragon instead? More patterns, if only they had a clairvoyant that could tell them what was coming. Finally, and before I even get to emote my opinions proper about the movie, there was no press screening, and when there's no press screening for a big movie like this, it always screams, danger, danger, Will Robinson. Not a good look. Put bluntly, this was an absolute shocker. I mean, shoddy CGI, the ropiest, as I said, of plot lines, and a lead villain who makes Tobey Maguire's Venom almost feel threatening. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Dakota Johnson is very curmudgeonly throughout. She's very angry, very deadpan lead who attempts to save three slightly annoying teenagers who are exactly just that. Three shallow teens to save not future Spider-Verse heroes, and kind of written quite badly, and the type of kids who probably would never hang out with each other. And do not be fooled by any of the costumes and drama you see in the trailers, because it's pretty non-existent. And even when those costumes do turn up, I have seen the worst CW superhero shows do better than that. Oh, folks, it's hammy, it's bloated, it's boring, it's aimless. I feel I should get off the fence soon and tell you what I really feel. I genuinely didn't think the Marvels last year couldn't have been outdone as how not to make a giant blockbuster. And there's a few others as well. But here we are with Madam Web rocking up and asking them to hold my beer. I have no idea why Sony, outside of Spider-Man and the Spider-Verse, it's like they're on a Brewster's Millions wager. You'll remember me discussing Brewster's Millions before. It's like, how can we lose as much money as possible for the Spidey adjacent spin-offs? I suppose they're quite lucky with Venom, but I think they can thank Tom Hardy for that, because the rest are different level nonsense. This does not bode well, by the way, for Kraven the Hunter later in the year, and it does feel like it's all gone a bit piton. There is no post-credit scenes, thanks Jeebus. Maybe it'll become one of those so bad it's good things in the future. But for now, the superhero fatigue discourse is going to kick into overdrive. And I repeat, as I have many times in the last year, this is not about superhero fatigue. This is about absolute muck fatigue. And if ever the eggs were all in one basket, I'm looking at you, Deadpool and Wolverine. No pressure, but if you do not deliver, which I personally think it will, then the golden superhero goose is well and truly cooked. So there you go. That's how I feel. you know what? You're probably going to go, because it's a sight to behold. It's a special thing. But anyway, we will move on. That is Madam Web awaiting your viewing pleasure now in cinemas. And I didn't even go near the Uncle Ben and Peter Parker stuff that's sprinkled. I'm not doing it. I'm walking away. I'm walking away.
Are you ready for Bob Marley and the Wailers? Don't let them fool you.
That's a hit.
Oh, no.
Reggae is the people music.
You know you're a superstar.
And a superstar. You can't separate the music and the message. You see, reggae music come to unify the people.
Not everyone likes what you're saying. For your own safety, you need to stop.
Bob Marley One Love is a new music biopic based on the life of reggae singer and songwriter Bob Marley from his rise to fame in the mid-1970s up until his death in 1981. The film stars Kingsley Benadire as Marley and also has Lashana Lynch as Rita Marley and James Norton as Chris Blackwell. This story of how reggae icon Bob Marley overcame adversity and the journey behind his revolutionary music is, well, it's a bit bland, actually. It's a bit bland. It's better than Madam Web. It's better than Madam Web. But it's, I mean, if you told me someone typed into an AI script robot, write me a Bob Marley movie, I do believe this is as close as you're going to get to that outcome. Every musical cliche you can imagine in a Hollywood adaptation is here for you to witness. And somehow, it kind of feels even flatter than that. Performances are fine. Yeah, not bad. The songs, obviously, when they're played, are quite wonderful. But the editing is a bit all over the gaff. And for a movie about revolution and genius, it kind of lacks any heart and soul. And you don't really get too involved with the various characters. And like, it reminds me of the Whitney Houston movie that was out there previously that was just, again, it was okay, but are they TV movies rather than cinema movies? Possibly. But anyway, funnily enough, in a week that Bohemians FC released their Tin Lizzy football jersey. That kind of gets you thinking of, be careful what you wish for, because obviously the Phil Lynott biopic, it's kind of one that you're like, oh, I wish some Irish company would make that, because that would be a story and a half. But if it's done like this and just a bit ho-hum, eh, maybe not. So maybe it's one to catch on streaming at some point. You know what? It'll be popular. It's decent sounds. And despite its overall meh-ness, if you've nothing else to do, sure, why not? There you go. What a recommendation. If you've nothing else to do, sure, Bob Marley, One Love, is now in cinemas. More promising, and with promise in the title, The Promised Land, starring Mads Mikkelsen, is set in 18th century Denmark, where impoverished war hero Captain Ludvig Kallen sets out to tame a vast, uninhabitable land on which seemingly nothing can grow. However, this beautiful but forbidden area is under the rule of Frederick de Schinkel, a merciless nobleman who realizes the threat Kallen represents to his power, leading to a violent and intense confrontation between the two men. Oh boy, oh boy, boy, boy. I went in kind of blind to this one, didn't know what I was getting, except for the fact that Mads was in it, and I do love a bit of Mads. This Nordic Western is a quite intense, stressful affair. It is a wonderful movie that gave me strong Dances with Wolves meets Black 47 vibes. Yes, I did go there. I mean, this has some tough scenes, but Mikkelsen is absolutely brilliant and carries the young cast on his back in glorious style. Simon Beneberg as de Schinkel is a revelation, and as far as on-screen villains go, you will remember this dude for quite some time. Oh, what a nasty little shit. I think that's the only way to describe him. Holy crap. Beautifully shot cinematography of this vast, barren landscape. It kind of helps us understand the predicament and struggle ahead for Mikkelsen's character in the taming of this land. And I'm going to urge anyone who loves historical dramas, world cinema, or a good old Western, you have to absolutely go see this movie. It's a sight to behold. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. The Promised Land, or Bastarden, as it's known in Denmark, is now on limited release in cinemas. Do it, you know you want to. And finally this week, The Taste of Things from France is set in 1855 and is the story of Eugenie, an esteemed cook, and Dodin, the fine gourmet who she has been working for over the last 20 years. Juliette Binoche and Benoît Magimel star as the leads in what can only be described as a quite sumptuous affair. Do not go into this movie hungry, folks. Do not. You will be chewing on your own leg by the end of it if you do. It feels like a proper old school French movie from a different era. I feel like I should have seen this in The Lighthouse on Abbey Street. That's how wonderful this looks. Beautifully shot, wonderfully acted, and containing that classic world cinema trope of a love unfulfilled that has been boiling and simmering away for years, like the pasta I never make at home. Nobody does romantic repression quite like the French. For those freaking out why Anatomy of a Fall was not submitted by the French as one of their choices for the Oscars submissions, this is one of those reasons. Its director Tran Anh Hung won the Best Director Award at the Cannes Film Festival, and it arrives in quite a blaze of hype. The best way of seeing this movie? Book it at a decent time. And have your dinner booked afterwards. If you're going to the Lighthouse, try get Grano or Molly's or Hackahan. Just live it. Live it large. Where you can wine and dine and discuss to your heart's content its beauty after. So, movie, don't eat any popcorn, dinner after. Absolutely gorgeous. The Taste of Things is now on limited release in cinemas. And there you go. What can I say? That is your movies. As I said, it's a 50-50. Too good, too bad. I think world cinema wins this week. Speaking of things, here are three things that we noticed in pop culture this week. Speaking of superhero fatigue earlier, the big news this week, which will give the genre a little shot in the arm, is that Marvel has finally cast its superhero family, the Fantastic Four, with Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby, Joseph Quinn, and Ebon Moss-Bachrach, all set to take on those classic roles. Pascal will play Reed Richards, a.k.a. Mr. Fantastic. Kirby will play Sue Storm, a.k.a. the Invisible Woman. Quinn will play Johnny Storm, a.k.a. the Human Torch. And Moss-Bachrach will play Ben Grimm, aka The Thing. Set for release on July 25th, 2025, and directed by WandaVision's Matt Shakman. For any nerds keeping score out there, the first Fox movie featuring Chris Evans as Johnny Storm was 2005. The next big reboot of the franchise with Michael B. Jordan as Johnny Storm was 2015. So it's nice to see that 10-year synergy going on, whether it's deliberate or accidental. Anyways, here's hoping the Fantastic Four finally find their groove with this incarnation, because the other ones weren't great. Let's not lie. And who knows, maybe they'll even turn up in Deadpool and Wolverine as a post-credit scene. Next up, here's a funny thing. Do you remember all that hullabaloo? Oh yes, so much hullabaloo about the Jake Gyllenhaal Roadhouse remake that director Doug Liman said he would not be attending the South by Southwest premiere because Amazon and MGM were releasing his movie on streaming and not in theatres, despite his rave test screenings. Well, according to the Hollywood Trade Variety, seemingly back in the early days when Amazon bought MGM, which originally did plan to release the movie theatrically, sources told Variety that Amazon Studios presented Doug Liman and Jake Gyllenhaal, who's a producer on it, with a choice. Make Roadhouse with a $60 million budget for a theatrical release, or get $85 million for an exclusive release on streaming-only deal. So despite all these protestations and toys and prams and all that lark, with the movie going straight to Prime, it doesn't take a Sherlock or Columbo to guess which package they took, and why is everybody complaining? Ah well, that's Hollywood. Something tells me this story is not over yet. And finally, in things, in post-Super Bowl news, and not Tay-Tay Goss, but in fact, it's about her boyf, that player guy who pushes coaches. Travis Kelce's debut as a film producer in Hollywood is landing at South by Southwest. Is the first movie financed using President Biden's green energy tax. So that's a plus for Joe's campaign. Kelce's first foray into movies is this indie movie, My Dead Friend Zoe, which follows a female Afghanistan veteran who comes head-to-head with her Vietnam vet grandfather at the family's ancestral lake house, and stars Sonequa Martin-Green, Natalie Morales, Ed Harris, and Morgan Freeman. He also seemingly has been shopping around a second feature, and with Taylor set to direct her first movie ever following her Eras tour, I do believe we may have a new Hollywood power couple worth keeping an eye on. Oh yes, oh yes. Anyway, that's your movies, that's your streaming, that's your things. This is David O'Callaghan for the Here and Back Again podcast, wishing you all the best. I hope you found love in the week that it was. And until next week, stay safe and binge happy. And if you didn't find love, there's loads to watch. Who cares? Well, hello. Hello there, post-credits traveller. Welcome. Sorry, bit of fluff in my mouth. Welcome yet again. Da-da-da-da-da. Yes, that place. That place that is well behind schedule. We are kicking off this week. We are Seat of the Pants podcasting. Truths may be told, and rambling tales may begin, but boy, oh boy, are we late. It's currently late Thursday Eve. Yes, well behind schedule, but you can blame Mammy on that one. Myself and Mary just had an awesome day, an awesome double bill of all the singing and all the dancing at Sister Acts at the Bord Gáis. What a treat it was. Absolutely fantastic. Loved it. And like most musicals, for some reason, I blubbed throughout the finale song. Yo, Is it called the finale song? Anyway, I'm obviously high on emotions by that stage. We then went to see a preview of the potty-mouthed Wicked Little Liars in the Lighthouse. Another treat with more tears, but this time from laughter. Jesse Buckley and Olivia Colman are an absolute delight, and we'll talk about that next week. And now, here we are. Dinner or any sort of food can wait, because you know what? This podcast needs to get out on time, and yes, not all superheroes wear capes. Some just starve themselves until they get their pods out. So it's time. Yes, it's time for your post-Super Bowl catch-up. Not ketchup, thinking about food. Catch-up. A lot has happened in a week, and I'm actually delirious, I think. And in that week, I don't mean the news being that the Chiefs won in overtime. So, what do we got for you? Well, this was the most viewed Super Bowl ever in the US in history. 123.4 million viewers. And not only was it the most watched Super Bowl ever, it is now the most watched, well, depending on the camps, we'll come to that, TV program in history. So in first place, technically, is the 1969 Apollo 11 moon landing, right? That's fine. However, that aired on multiple networks, so hence the high numbers. So if you look at all the different networks, actually the Super Bowl got more viewers, which is more logical because more people have TVs. But anyway, right now, people are saying the Super Bowl overall wins. Some people say it's second, but you know what? It doesn't matter because that's bleeding mahoosive. So congrats to the Chiefs. Sad times to the 49ers. For not really understanding the new rules of overtime. Oh, the time cost. It's all about the time cost, folks. And huzzah to Tay-Tay for defo dragging in quite a number of new viewers. Movie trailer-wise, well, there was only one winner. And speaking of breaking records, the winner on the night, based on both content and reaction, was Deadpool 3, or as was finally named and revealed, Deadpool and Wolverine. This trailer, 24 hours after airing during the Super Bowl, was seen by 365 million folks online worldwide. Like, what? So that makes it the most viewed trailer of all time and beats the previous record, which was held, previous 24-hour record, which was held by Sony Marvel Studios' Spider-Man No Way Home, which was seen by 255 million. So, holy crap, things are looking good for Marvel and Deadpool. And after our little friend Madam Web, that's good news for everybody. Other trailers that caught my eye and had me leaning forward in my chair at all hours of the morning were Wicked, which was not advertised as a part one and was not advertised as a musical, but looked absolutely gorgeous. I'm all in. Praise be. Bring it on. The Twister sequel, Twisters, starring Glenn Powell, looked simply fantastic. Over the top, had me at destruction, twin twisters, holy crap, get in. And you know what else is mad? I'll tell you what's mad. This movie is directed by the guy who did Minari. What is happening? But it looks friggin' awesome. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes was probably the other big release. And that comes from Wes Ball of Maze Runner. And not gonna lie, it looks pretty good. So, yeah, some pretty good hits. There was other ones, but they were kind of outside the walls of the Super Bowl, so it doesn't count. Exciting times for Hollywood. So there are the big winning trailers that were revealed within the broadcast. And commercial-wise, well, Ben Affleck and Dunkin' Donuts seem to win the day. The Dunkings, the Dunkings. There's a 4-minute extended version of this ad that you must see. It's a thing of beauty. It's almost like The Godfather 2. The other big winner in the commercial wars, I suppose you'd call it, was Michael Cera with his CeraVe skincare ad, which, you know, it was totally bizarre and very funny and a huge hit. So take a look at that craziness. And there you go. Short, sweet and to the point. I needed to clear all that clutter of the Super Bowl. Get it out of the way because the Oscars are coming over the hill. You're all caught up now. I can go ping a meal because, you know, Man's got to eat. So with that, I will leave you with a tune which represents the themes and vibes of the week while also represents the weather, funnily enough. And remember, folks, only love can set you free.